Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
Chicken Soup for the Soul is 20 years old this year. Since its first release in 1993, the Chicken Soup for the Soul series has sold more than 112 million copies in only the U.S. and Canada. And it has almost 200 titles published in 40 languages. To commemorate, originators Mark Victor Hansen and Jack Canfield, along with publisher Amy Newmark, have published two books. The original Chicken Soup for the Soul that now includes 20 bonus stories, and a volume called Reader's Choice, in which original Chicken Soup for the Soul stories are published, along with accompanying stories of how they've changed lives. We're privileged today to have the publisher and also editor and co-author of Chicken Soup for the Soul, Amy Newmark, as our guest. I want to welcome you to Full Power Living, which is the only show on international media that regularly works to transform our world by exploring the power and importance of human emotions. Now, Amy Newmark signed on to publish Chicken Soup for the Soul after it had been going strong for 15 years, and you would then accept the notion that she herself is a remarkable individual. So let me tell you a little bit about her. She's led a successful 30-year career as a writer, speaker, financial analyst, and business executive in the worlds of finance and telecommunications. She's a magna cum laude graduate of Harvard University, and she earned a summa cum laude on her thesis, for which she traveled throughout the poverty-stricken northeast section of Brazil, meeting with poets and writers and collecting their stories for her dissertation on whether the form of popular poetry she was collecting would survive the modernization of Brazil. As a college senior, she joined the commercial sector, editing a newsletter about opportunities to sell telecom equipment in Brazil. And this led to a new passion for the telecommunications industry. So she became an industry consultant. She eventually worked for the Gartner Group, where she wrote several books on telecommunications and ran the telecommunications services practice. Then she moved to Wall Street, where she spent many years writing and speaking about telecommunications and information services, providing her stock picks and pans to mutual funds and hedge fund clients. So, of course, that led to the start of her own telecommunications and technology-oriented hedge fund, T93. Then she joined the original management team of Windstar Communication as Executive Vice President of Strategic Planning, and she left after 2 years. She spent the next 10 years serving on the boards of several public companies in telecommunications and technology, and then in 2008, she stepped in as publisher of Chicken Soup for the Soul. That was on their 15th anniversary. She's now come full circle in her writing career, from collecting poetry from the people in Brazil as a 20-year-old to 30 years of writing about business, and now back to collecting stories and poems from the people for Chicken Soup for the Soul. Amy Newmark, it's certainly a privilege and a pleasure to have you on Full Power Living. Welcome.
Oh, thank you so much. Wow, I'm getting tired thinking about all of that. I'm really feeling old.
Yeah, I know. Sometimes when it's all written down, you go, wow, that was me, wasn't it?
I was just sitting here thinking, I wonder what Eileen has done. I'm sure it's just as interesting.
We can talk later. With all this that you've done, it still had to be quite exciting for you to take on the publishing of the Chicken Soup for the Soul series. And I want to know what drew you to take on this work.
What happened was, my husband and I were looking for a new business opportunity, and a friend introduced us to somebody who had the right to go in and buy Chicken Soup for the Soul from Jack and Mark, who were looking to move on in their careers. And so I read about 100 of the old Chicken Soup for the Soul books, because I really wasn't familiar with them. I mean, I had one, but I wasn't a normal consumer because I had, I don't know, spent my whole career writing and not reading enough, and I just had missed these fabulous books. So I read about 100 books, as part of our due diligence, and I said, wow, these are amazing. In fact, I remember that I would be so moved by them that I had to keep changing my contact lenses because, you know, I would ruin them with my teary eyes. I mean, not that they all make you tear up. Some of the stories just make you laugh hysterically. So I read 100 books, and I said, oh, my gosh, I know what to do. I am meant to be the publisher of this line of books. I know exactly how to set this line up for another 15 years. I know exactly what to do. I realized I had been meant to do this. And so we bought the company. We're still very friendly with Jack and Mark. They're still very involved with us. And I relaunched the publishing line. We redesigned the book interiors. We redesigned the covers. We changed the titling. So it's not Chicken Soup for the Something Soul. Now it's Chicken Soup for the Soul, and then we put whatever title we want, which really frees us to cover a lot of great new topics. And we made the books nice and fat again. We went back to 101 stories in every book, but we left the price the same as it's been for, I think, almost 10 years. And we started making the books even more diverse in terms of the contributors from whom we got the stories. We started pushing the edge of the envelope in terms of covering new topics. And so I think we have a reinvigorated line of book now that is still true to what is the very best about Chicken Soup for the Soul, which is that these are stories that come from ordinary people who have had extraordinary experiences. And it's almost like Chicken Soup for the Soul was there in the early days of blogging and people sharing their stories, but it was all set in print back in those days. Now everybody's sharing these stories online, et cetera, and we get all of the stories from people online, but I view us now as a fabulous curator of user-generated content, and that's what makes our books still so successful, still a publishing phenomenon, and still experiencing growth every year, despite the fact that the publishing industry has been suffering so much in recent years.
That certainly is saying something. I wanted to go back to the early days. I'm assuming you know a lot about the origins. You should know that I am a member, a professional member of the National Speakers Association, which both Mark Victor Hansen and Jack Canfield are, and I think they were both members of the chapter that I belong to here in Northern California. So I was there way back in the beginning and know a little bit about what it was that was going on. Jack Canfield was going around telling his stories in his wonderful presentations and workshops, and people started asking him, where is that story written down? I want so-and-so to read it. And that's how the series got started, but it didn't really get off the ground until Jack and Mark Victor Hansen paired up. Is that an accurate rendition, according to your understanding?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And it's exactly what happened. And we still do the same thing now. If we hear a great story, we get people to write it down for us and get it into our books, or we write it down for the people. And Jack and Mark were perhaps among the earliest motivational speakers to recognize the power of storytelling. Because if you look at the entire history of mankind, storytelling has always been the best way to pass on wisdom and culture and advice. It's how we share information through the generations. And they use storytelling so effectively in their motivational speeches. And people were asking them, please, can you get these all written down in a book? So Jack and Mark did collaborate, and then they went on a search for a publisher. And they were rejected by just about every publisher in the country. And then finally got published, and then they were really doing a grassroots marketing campaign, sending books to as many people as possible to try to create some buzz, although I guess we didn't even use the word buzz 20 years ago. They were really very good at marketing, and they did everything possible to get the word out, and of course it worked beautifully, and that first Chicken Soup for the Soul book ended up selling more than 8 million copies just in the U.S. and Canada. Now we've actually grown to more than 250 titles. This is like McDonald's hamburgers. Every time you turn around, the number has gone up again. We should have one of those little digital readers up on our wall in the office, right? Because it's about one a month are coming out. So we still put Jack and Mark's name on most of the books because this is their legacy. This is what they created, and they created something that is going strong 20 years later and I think is still an incredibly powerful way to motivate people, to help them solve their problems, and also to entertain them because entertaining people is really important. We think that making people happy is just as important as inspiring them. I mean, we say we're basically sharing happiness and inspiration and wellness in everything we do. And some of our books are just plain fun. Our books about dogs and cats are just plain fun. And boy, our latest dog and cat books that came out a little over a year ago have been on the pet bestseller list every single week for a year.
That's interesting. As I was looking through the newly published books here for the 20th anniversary, I was remembering a story of my son, who at the age of 5, we took on a cranky old dog. I knew a person who couldn't keep this dog anymore, and the dog had a reputation for biting children. And so I tried taking her on, and she came after my son one day. And he's a 5-year-old, and he would hide in his bedroom and open his door crack and ask me where Tracy was because he wouldn't come out of his room. And I had permission from the owner to put her to sleep if she didn't work out. And so I said to him, this is no way for a 5-year-old to grow up. I need to put this dog to sleep. And he tearfully came to me and begged me, please don't put her to sleep. She just doesn't know how much I love her. And please let me teach her. And I said, how's a little kid like you going to teach this cranky old dog that you love her? And he said, I'm going to pet her and I'm going to talk to her and I'm whatever. So with a combination of him doing that and me teaching him how he could break a dog biscuit in half and throw it to her under the desk where she slept, and he only did that when I was around, I gave him 3 weeks, and within 3 weeks, that child could go in under the desk, put his arms around the dog and hug her, and she never bit him.
Oh, you need to write Dory up for us. We're putting together our next dog book. We are huge proponents of adopting dogs, and particularly senior dogs. I mean, it's a really important part of what we do. In fact, we will give preference to stories about people who have adopted senior dogs because we're so adamant that, you know, there's a tremendous value to older dogs. Please don't go and only, you know, adopt puppies. And so I'd love to have your story in our next dog book.
That would be great. I'll find out how to go about doing that later. I remember going to a round table where Mark Victor Hansen was presenting to the speakers about the origins of the Chicken Soup for the Soul series, and he made the comment that kind of blew me away at the time. There's no point in writing a book unless you know you're going to be able to make $1 million off of it right off the top. And it really, plus the things that he said, it really told me what a marketing powerhouse he was. And I just want to make comment that the force of that kind of marketing has certainly lasted for a long time.
I can assure you that we are not looking at numbers like that anymore. And I think that he was probably saying you should always believe that about a book that you're producing. But in fact, that is not our philosophy at all. And we make plenty of books where we don't really expect to make a lot of money. And we're really making the books as a public service. For example, earlier this year, we did a book for the autism community. It's called Raising Kids on the Spectrum, and we are donating proceeds from the book to the Kennedy Krieger Institute, which is a brain institute that specializes in children on the autism spectrum. We collected stories from parents of children at every part of the autism spectrum, from Asperger's all the way to severely disabled, and we were getting basically love letters from mothers saying, you know, your book made me realize I'm not alone. I wept. I laughed. Your book changed my life. I feel so much better. I got so many useful tips about how to raise my child who's on the autism spectrum. We're doing a book in April with the Alzheimer's Association to help people who are caretakers for family members with Alzheimer's. We're doing a book next summer on traumatic brain injuries. So we are doing a lot of books that we feel meet a need in society where we're not expecting to make a lot of money, but where we really think that we can help. So it's a very important part of what Chicken Soup for the Soul does. I mean, my husband and I came out of retirement to do this, and sure, we want to make the payroll, but we're really interested in changing people's lives, carrying on this legacy, and making books that really make a difference to people. So we donate a lot of our proceeds to different charities, and we're always trying to support different causes with our books.
You are having too much fun. That sounds wonderful. That sounds wonderful. You know, I was going to ask you, you just mentioned traumatic brain injuries. My ex-husband and his wife have a son who has who had a traumatic brain injury and has done a remarkable job of surviving for more than 10 years due to the various things that they've done. If I were to tell somebody like them where they could submit their story, could they submit it to you, and how would they go about doing that?
To submit a story to us, you go to our website, which is chickensoup.com, and there you will see a button you could press on that says something like submit your story. And then in there you'll find all of the different books that we're working on right now where we're still open to receiving new stories. And that will include the traumatic brain injury book and also the dog book and a number of other books. Mm-hmm. And then it's very easy to submit the story. Anybody who has any computer proficiency can do it. We have plenty of elderly people who do it quite happily. And that's the best way for us to receive submissions. And, in fact, the only way now that we receive submissions is via our website.
Wow. So one of the questions I wanted to look at, and you bring this up, is how the publishing industry has changed as a result of these stories. Like, for example, it's my understanding from the beginning, no person who submitted a story was ever paid for that submission. And now people are quite willing to submit without payment, although prior to that, very few people were, to my knowledge. And here's another one. You don't ever have to talk to a publisher. You don't do anything. You can just write up what you want, push a button, and send it in. How has the publishing industry changed?
First of all, we have always paid for stories. We're very proud of the fact that we pay our writers so much. We pay $200 per story, and then we also give our writers 10 free copies of the book, and the books retail for $14.95. So
that's
we
really
are considered
generous.
To be... Yeah, I mean, it's very, very generous, especially since we don't take ownership of the story. We merely buy the right to use the story in Chicken Soup for the Soul's products, books, et cetera, but the writer of the story retains the copyright and has the ability to resell the story to someone else. So we pride ourselves on the fact that we pay so well, and there are many freelance writers who will always try to get a story published by us before they'll offer it to anyone else. And
I
now I forgot the second part of your question.
First of all, let me just throw in here that I certainly did not mean to malign your process. This is something I did not know. I know from the early days. The second part was, how has this changed the publishing industry?
I think we changed the publishing industry in that we showed people that through thick or thin, through good times and bad times, a publishing company could still grow. And we focused the publishing industry more on the power of storytelling and on the power of books that would be considered to be in the self-help area. We also created a lot of imitators. And it has been interesting to watch them fall by the wayside over the years. There's been just one attempted imitating series after another, and they've all failed, which is fine. I mean, we think we're the best at what we do. And mm-hmm. sometimes we hear from our writers that they're very upset because they gave a story to one of the other compilation series and that company didn't pay them for their story, or only paid them $50, or maybe the story just wasn't read by enough people and they really wanted to spread their story to more people. Because what I've learned from our writers is that they're sharing their stories with us not really to make the $200 and get the 10 free copies of the book, but mm-hmm. really because they want to share what they've learned. Our writers are so unselfish, because sometimes they'll share these personal, revealing stories, And they'll tell us that we're really their first confidant. They've never told these stories to friends family members. And they tell us these stories, and for some reason they feel better about sharing these stories with perhaps 100,000 strangers instead of telling the stories to their friends or family members directly. Sometimes we even go to people and say, are you sure you want to share this story? And they say, yeah, I want to share the story. We've had women share stories about perhaps being raped, and they come out with us, basically, and they get over the hurdle of talking about it because they want to go and help other women. So they do it through our books. In fact, one of my friends did it that way. She wrote her story for one of our books, and that was her coming out on that issue. So I think that we've changed publishing in a lot of different ways. We've shown publishers what's possible, and we've also helped a lot of new writers come to grips with personal issues, discover that they do have the writing talent or the writing bug, and we have made so many people into successful writers. It's amazing how many people started out writing stories for us once in a while and ended up getting whole books of their own published because they had built up their writer's resume by writing for us.
That's fantastic. I want to add one more thing for you to feel good about. Some time ago, we had James Pennebaker, who's a professor at the University of Texas, on the show. He has done research in many different situations about what happens with people when they tell their stories through writing and how it improves their health. So I'd like to just add that you could also say that you've been helping people be healthier because they've been able to share the burdens of their stories, and that's a really wonderful thing. Thanks for doing that.
We actually get thank you notes from people whose stories we have rejected. They write to us and they say, well, we get thousands of stories submitted for every book, so I mean, people know they're not going to get published. It's pretty good if you get published in one of our books because you're one of 101 stories that got published out of thousands that were submitted. But people will write to us and say, I didn't get published, but that's okay because the act of writing the story changed my life. It forced me to come to grips with whatever I was writing about. I had to organize my thoughts. Just putting it on paper changed me in some way. So that's a wonderful thing. When I know, it makes me feel less guilty about all the ones I'm rejecting because I know I've actually helped many of them just by giving them this outlet.
Oh, you have such a soft heart. That's lovely. We need to take a break, Amy. You're listening to Full Power Living. My guest today is Amy Newmark, who's publisher, editor, and co-author of Chicken Soup for the Soul, which this year is celebrating its 20th anniversary. And exciting things are happening with Chicken Soup for the Soul. We're going to tell you more about what else is happening right here on Full Power Living when we return.
Eileen Dillon is a certified senior life mentor with Accessing Universal Intelligence. She's available to conduct mentoring sessions with you to help you understand, change, and evolve using the advice of your own higher self. You can be anywhere in the world. Sessions are conducted through Skype. For more information about these life mentoring sessions, fees, and how to register, go to www.emotionalpro.com and click on the mentoring link at the top. Get personally tailored assistance with your toughest life questions. Visit mentoring@emotionalpro.com today.
Welcome back to Full Power Living. Go now to emotionalpro.com's homepage and register to receive our twice-weekly newsletter. It gives you information on our upcoming shows and guests, and if you miss any of our live Full Power Living broadcasts, you can listen to the archives with your friends and family, either on Blog Talk Radio or at emotionalpro.com. You also can subscribe to Full Power Living on iTunes. And I also want to give a big shout-out today to all of our listeners in China. We're glad you're with us, and we love hearing from you, so Thank you for writing. My guest today is Amy Newmark, publisher, editor, and co-author of Chicken Soup for the Soul, this year celebrating its 20th anniversary with two books, The Original Chicken Soup for the Soul and Reader's Choice. So, Amy, we were talking about people submitting stories. You get thousands. You can take 101. How do you select a story for Chicken Soup for the Soul?
It's a really big responsibility. Sometimes I feel like a college admissions officer. I know they feel terrible, you know, when they reject somebody. And it's hard because sometimes, you know, you feel like you could take another 100 stories and have just as good a book. I mean, we really get to publish the cream of the crop when we put together one of our books. And we have a whole team that works on these books. I make the ultimate decision about every single story in every single book. And I edit every single word of every single story. But I have a team of wonderful people who work with me. And they read every single story that is submitted. So it doesn't matter if you're a first-time writer. It doesn't matter if you're one of our regulars. Everyone has an equal chance of getting into one of our books. We read every story. At least one person reads each one. Often we have two people read each story so that we can get a second opinion. And we are really looking for stories that will make a difference to people. We want stories that are uplifting, that are entertaining, that will motivate people, or that will make them laugh, or that will make them tear up. But we're not all about tear jerkers. I know there's an erroneous perception out there that Chicken Soup for the Soul, you should read the books while violins are playing and you're sobbing quietly into your handkerchief, but we're really not like that at all. I mean, I laugh out loud so many times reading our stories. Or I read a story and I say to my husband, you've just got to hear this story. It's funny, we were watching Grey's Anatomy the other night and there was a story on Grey's Anatomy, you know, one of their subplots. And a couple of days later, I read basically the exact same story in a book that I'm putting together right now. It was the same story except that it actually happened in real life and we're publishing it. So I told him about that. I mean, this happens all the time. Truth is really stranger than fiction, isn't it? But anyway, we read all the stories. We pick the ones that we think are best for that topic, the ones we think will have the best effect on our readers, whether it makes them laugh, motivates them, makes them pick up the phone to call their mother to share the story. And then we edit them. And some stories come in great shape, and we hardly have to edit them at all. Other stories need a lot of editing. There's a good kernel in there, but we really have to rewrite the story. So we do whatever is necessary, and then often we put a new title on the story, because sometimes people write titles like a dog, a kid, and a dining room table, you know, and we change it to some other title, you know, like how my kid saved a dog or something, whatever the title ends up being. And then we put an inspirational quote at the beginning of each story, which I think adds a lot of value to the stories. They're great quotes, and we work really hard on the quotes. We also fact check, like, this is something that couldn't be done in the old days of Chicken Soup for the Soul, because it started before there was really good internet access for everybody. But now that we have the internet, we fact check everything. Last night I was reading a story that's going into our Miracles Happen book that's coming out in February, and fact-checked the story, and it had happened in 1985, not 1984. But we fact-check absolutely everything. And we, therefore, are pretty sure that our stories are true, and we sometimes help our writers remember something better than they were actually remembering it because of our fact-checking.
Wow, that really maintains a high level of integrity, too. I can see why you're projecting another 15 or 20 years at least.
Yeah, this is a formula for success that is so intrinsic to the human condition that there's no reason why we can't keep sharing these powerful stories with people for another 20 years. And that was why I decided to take the original Chicken Soup for the Soul book that started it all and reissue it in honor of our 20th anniversary, but with 20 bonus stories for the next 20 years. And what we did, and this was just so much fun, was we went to the people we considered to be today's thought leaders, and we got new stories from them for this book. So we got stories from, of course, Jack Canfield and Mark Victor Hansen. We went back to Tony Robbins, who had written for the original book. We got a great story from Dr. Oz that he wrote fresh for our book. We got a story from Nick Ortner, who is the tapping solution person. We got a story from Chris Carr, you know, a new thought leader of today. She wrote Crazy Sexy Cancer. We got a story from Dr. Deepak Chopra, Lori Deshane from Little Buddha, Darren Hardy from Success Magazine, M.K. Asante, Reverend Michael Beckwith, Gabrielle Bernstein, Tori Johnson. It goes on and on. We got great stories from all of these people who are so influential today. And we added a fresh new voice to these classic stories that everyone loves. And so I see this book absolutely being relevant for another 20 years. And everything we do should keep us very relevant, especially all these new topics that we're covering. So it's very exciting to be at the beginning of the next phase of Chicken Soup for the Soul. Oh, and by the way, we have moved beyond the bookstore now. We have a fast-growing line of dog food and cat food, very high-end dog food and cat food. We have launched a line of food for people, wonderful soups and broths and gravies and pasta sauces, and we're going to have all kinds of healthy snack items. So that's rolling out across the country now. We also have a major motion picture under development, which we're doing with a wonderful studio called Alcon Entertainment, which is the same studio that made The Blind Side. We have a daily talk show that we're launching next year. So there are a lot of great things going on where we can continue to share the happiness and inspiration and wellness from these stories in many other different ways.
That is amazing. Now, I've seen the dog and cat food in my store, but where will the people food be? In ordinary grocery stores, high-end grocery stores? Where?
It's in ordinary grocery stores. We actually did not go high-end with the way we did with the dog food and cat food. We wanted to have the food be high-end in terms of ingredients and quality, but we wanted to price it more in the mainstream. So, for example, our soups are priced just about the same price as Progresso, maybe a few cents more, but we're in that mainstream area. And you can go to our website, chickensoup.com, and see where the food is available so far in the country. We're in, I think, almost half the states in the country now. We have a whole list of grocery stores on our website. Food is great. It has actually changed my life because I used to cook so much stuff from scratch, and now I don't have to. For example, the pasta sauce, I never had used sauce from a jar before. I didn't even realize that 90% of people use sauce from a jar. And now I'm pouring sauce right from the jar using the Chicken Soup for the Soul pasta sauce. And our chef, who is the former head chef of the Waldorf Astoria, he was there for 30 years, he told me he never used sauce from a jar before. He always cooked sauce from scratch. And now he's pouring our sauce on his pasta. Of course, he made it. He develops all these recipes in his kitchen at home. And then he figures out how to make them on a larger scale for our food business. And so it's fabulous because he's cooked for every U.S. president. He's cooked for all this royalty at the Waldorf Astoria. And now he gets to cook for us and everyone out there. So it's terrific.
Like I said, you're having way too much fun. This brings a real laugh to my... I for a long, long time, didn't use sauce from a jar because, interestingly enough, my stepmother didn't like to cook. But the one thing that she did really, really well is she made homemade spaghetti sauce, and she'd cook it all day long. It would smell up the place, and I always wanted to be like that, too. But I'll look forward to trying those out because that sounds really good. So not only now do you have the books, but you've got pet food, people food, television talk show, and a motion picture. In my work here on the radio program, what I run into a lot is increasingly, in the last couple of years, more and more books about spiritual enlightenment, spiritual development, healing with spiritual forces that haven't been available before, etc., etc. Are you seeing that, and are there trends in submissions? Are there things that
that come along that you can see the change of the society that you get involved with?
I think that there are, and it's interesting that you brought up the whole issue of spirituality and faith, because we are having so much success with our books on spirituality and faith. And we do have a line of books that are extremely Christian. We have 4 different books now of devotional stories. But we also have a lot of books that are for people who have some kind of faith or spirituality, but it doesn't even have to be a particular religion. People who are very religious love these books, but people who are not a member of a particular religion love these books. Also, we have books about miracles. We have books about angels. We have books about people receiving signs from their loved ones who have passed on. We had tremendous success with a book we put out in 2012 called Messages from Heaven. And we just last week put out another book called Miraculous Messages from Heaven. It was our largest first printing in many years. And we put out a book called Angels Among Us last year that has been a bestseller since the first day it came out. We're going to do another book next year called Guardian Angels. We're collecting stories for that. We also are putting together a book right now called Miracles Happen, and that's one I'm working on right now when I'm not on the radio. And I have found that people are definitely looking for stories about awesome, extraordinary things that happen, where you read the stories and they give you chills and you don't really know how to explain them. You could explain them through different religious beliefs, or you could explain them through some other way. The other area where we have been finding a huge amount of interest is positive thinking. And we put out a book 3 years ago called Think Positive, and that's been our bestseller in the last, I don't know, at least in the last 6 years or so. It's still going strong, and we followed that with a book called Find Your Happiness, because happiness is a really big topic now. We did a book called Count Your Blessings. We put out a book a few months ago called From Lemons to Lemonade. All of these books are about looking at your life, realizing the blessings that you do have in your life, realizing that you have within yourself all of the power that you need to change your life. We're very, very committed to making people understand how strong they actually are, how much resiliency they're capable of, how much they are in control of their own lives. And so we don't publish stories where people have something bad happen to them and then they sit around feeling sorry for themselves. In our story, something bad happens to them, and they turn it into something good, and they tell us how they did it. And it's really inspiring.
I love that. I don't know if you're aware, I've been a psychotherapist for 41 years, and in essence, that's what I help people to do on a in-the-trenches kind of basis. And it's really wonderful, the things that people find they can do and the ways in which we human beings can heal ourselves. So that's really wonderful. I wish I'd known about the lemons to lemonade. I have so much lemonade in my refrigerator. That's a joke. I have to turn a lot of lemons into lemonade is all I'm saying.
I think I'd make a bad psychoanalyst, because I think I'd treat the patients the way I look at the stories. If I get a story from somebody who's just complaining, I don't use it. I think I'd be that way with patients. If they came in and they were complaining, I would just say, like, do you think you're the only person this ever happened to? Get over it. Because really, I'm taking the stories and publishing the stories from those people who said to themselves, you know what, I'm not the only person this has ever happened to, and I am going to get over it. And then they tell us how they did it.
Right. Well, I'd just like to assure you that your approach as a therapist is not necessarily a bad one. Sometimes people need to hear. Well, you know, one of the things I say to a couples come in and they go, well, this happened 3 years ago and she didn't do this and he didn't do that. And I listen to them for a little while and then I say, look, the only time you have power is in the present. And I want you to know I've done this for a lot of years.
and I've never found two people who can agree on what happened in the past. The only thing you can really do now is go from here on. And anything short of that is wasting your time and money and my time. So what'll it be?
Oh, you'd be my kind of analyst for sure. Definitely.
You know, otherwise, as you're pointing out, you're just wallowing in it. You know, I want to get back to this idea of story, because the word story is now, talk about trends, is now appearing everywhere. It's important for you to tell your story. Your story inspires other people's story. We're all living stories. Our beliefs are our story. If you're having a bad day, it's a story you're telling yourself. Are you aware, of, as I am, of how much story, the concept story, has pervaded our culture?
Yes, and I'm seeing it now in marketing campaigns for different companies, and I think it's because of the Internet. It's easy to collect stories now from people, and because of blogging and chat sites and everything else, people are more accustomed to writing stories down and sharing them, even if they're much shorter stories than what we do. I've noticed a lot of these companies that are, say, a car company might say, tell the story about how the car changed your life, but they want, you know, 200 words or something like that. So, yeah, uh-huh. I've definitely noticed it. I think we're still the king. Every time I see it, I think, well, that's nice, but we do it better.
Okay, well, let me ask from the kingdom. In all the stories that you have read and edited and accepted and not accepted, do you have a favorite?
I guess there's one that I keep going back to, and it was by a woman named Georgia Schaefer. And it just appealed to me personally. But she was going through cancer treatment, and a purported friend said, oh, I'll drive you to chemo. And as her friend drove her to chemo, all she did was tell her about everybody she knew who had died of cancer. And Georgia wrote that she really didn't need this kind of negative energy in her life, and she realized this really was not a friend. And she decided that she would look at her life as if it were a garden. And in a garden, you prune, you pull out all the weeds so that the flowers have space for themselves and can flourish. And she decided that she was going to weed the people in her life and only keep in her life positive people with positive energy who added value to her life. And I am so busy, and maybe I'm just getting crotchety, I don't know, now that I'm in my 50s, but I thought I should do the same thing. I should make sure that I surround myself with positive people who make me happy and who bring a smile to my face when I get to see them or talk to them on the phone. And that gave me the power to say no and to really make sure that all of the time that I have available for friends and family is spent in a way that adds value to my life and keeps me mentally healthy.
I am now 70, and when I turned 50, I noticed something, and I began to notice it in other 50-year-old women in particular. You turn 50, and there's some part of you that says, I am not putting up with another second of anybody's BS. This is my life for me. Is that familiar
You're
to
right.
you?
You're right. Oh, it is so familiar. It's so familiar. And I think it's when I turned 50, my youngest went off to college. I became the publisher of Chicken Soup for the Soul. It all happened when I was 50. And I think you're right. I put my foot down and I said, no more BS. And this is how I run the books. The books are all no more BS. The books are like, here's the problem. Here's how you solve it. This is what you do. You know, let's just cut to the chase. I hire a lot of journalists to work here because they know how to get to tell the story, get to, you know, cut to the chase. And it's funny, just this week, my husband and I decided that we're going to elope for Thanksgiving. That's what we're calling it. We're
nice.
Eloping. I'm not making dinner for 15 people this year. We're getting out of here. And my children are eloping with us. And we're going to my daughter's house. We're going to my daughter's house and having a small Thanksgiving, and it's going to be fabulous. Yeah. So I guess I only have more of that to look forward to, don't I, Eileen?
Yes, absolutely. My husband this week said, oh, why don't we have all the kids over here? And I said, are you cooking? If I'm not. I've done that enough times. Yeah, it's really an interesting phenomenon. I think we women, you know, we tend to serve others and be concerned for them, and no matter what. I mean, you're very accomplished and were busy all your life, but you still were serving people. And somehow when 50 hits, it's like, okay, I did it. Let's move on
I'm
to the new
serving.
Now. The new is
my parents are in their 80s, and my mother went away for 3 weeks, and for the last 3 weeks, I was over at my father's house doing his laundry and changing his sheets. So I might be making all these great books during the day, but I was still washing my father's underwear on the weekend.
Here's what I have to say to that. And your parents sent you to Harvard for that?
Yeah. I do a little of everything.
That's delightful. Well, I'm sure it makes you feel really good, too, to be able. Well, that is another function as we get older, that we want to serve our world and our community. So I don't want to detract from that. But that was an interesting phenomenon for me to see. Well, Amy, it's time for us to draw this to a close. I just have really enjoyed this talk with you. Thank you for being so candid about your operation and what you're doing, and what a fantastic undertaking you and your husband have done, and what great things lie ahead for you as well. So thank you for that, and thank you for being with me today here on Full Power Living.
Thank you, Eileen. It's been a real pleasure.
All right, so join us every Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern Time, when we go in-depth with our guests, helping you to understand your emotions, yourself, and your world better. This has been a phenomenal year during which we've explored many amazing ideas and abilities that are new in our world, and I can't wait to find out what 2014 brings to us. Paul and Robin Johnston of Fresh Talk Media are our producers. Robin's been on today. Thank you, Robin, for your support. For now, I'm Eileen Dillon, your host, reminding you, pay attention not to what you want to overcome, but to what you want to become.
You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.